For 25 years and counting, Rebecca Eaton has presided over PBS's Masterpiece, the longest-running weekly primetime drama series on American television. She brings to her new memoir, Making Masterpiece, the voices of many of the writers, directors, producers, and other contributors, and shares personal anecdotes about her decade-spanning career. She shares stories about luminaries such as Alistair Cook, Maggie Smith, Diana Rigg, Benedict Cumberbatch, Kenneth Branagh, and Daniel Radcliffe, whose first TV role was as the title character in David Copperfield. Eaton has been executive producer of Masterpiece since 1985. Under her leadership, the series has earned 44 Primetime Emmy Awards, 15 Peabody Awards, 4 Golden Globes, and 2 Academy Award nominations, but who is counting? Rebecca Eaton, it's a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Hi, Joe. Nice to talk to you.
Very nice to have you with us. How do you describe what it is that you do? It's, by simply saying executive producer of Masterpiece, that term can be used for many different capacities within the television world. So give us a sense of how you see your position.
I think I try not to choose the bad British dramas to share with the American public. Executive producer means different things in different media. A film executive producer is different from a television, different from a theater, different from a record producer. So I can tell you what my job is. It is to choose the programs, seriously. And I am offered the programs, which are made by our British partners. I am offered them as ideas, as a script, maybe just as a pitch over dinner, sometimes an adaptation of a book. So I read scripts and talk to producers and the creative people involved, decide if this is something we want to co-partner on. Then I negotiate the deals, give the money to the companies who are going to make these things. We're involved in the casting, the scripts, but then they are, my mantra is to leave them alone while they make the show, because I think these are some of the best British, are some of the best television producers in the world. They know what they're doing, and what you need is to be left alone often to do your best work. Besides which, I'm in Boston and they're in England.
Right.
So they make the shows, then we look at the cuts. Then the other part of my job is to make sure though the programs are showcased in the best possible way in this country, to call attention to them, to publicize them, promote them. So that's what I have to do specifically for the shows. The other thing as an executive producer has to do is raise the money. So raising the money now, most of our funding comes from PBS in Washington. So working with them to explain what we're trying to do, what we're planning to do in the future. And we now have sponsors, Ralph Lauren and Viking River Cruises, working with them to make sure they're happy and know what's coming. And we have created the Masterpiece Trust, which is a way that people can contribute money directly to Masterpiece to support the shows. So raise money, make creative choices, and keep everybody happy. That's what executive producers
do. The hardest part of the job, I would think.
Yeah. Hardest part of the job.
You said this at the very beginning of and jokingly, but of, you know, keeping the bad British drama from us.
Yes, protecting you from it.
Protecting us from that. When you get the good British drama, and I was fascinated in the book and what you just described of how you then have a hand in casting and so forth occasionally. So it's not just like taking what is there, what is being produced in England, what's being produced by the BBC, and bringing it to this country. You have more of a hand in it than that.
Yes, I don't want to overemphasize these, because full credit goes to the people who are laboring in England to make the shows. But, you know, it's the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. Depending on how much money you have in a project, invested in a project, is, you know, directly relates to how much influence you'll have. We don't put, you know, tons of money into these projects. We're not even 50% funders of them. But I think what we've earned over 30 to 40 years of partnering is that we can be a useful creative editorial voice in terms of, relating to our own audience, what will go down, who will go down well with an American audience. You know, we ask for a list of, you know, three choices for a principal character to cast a principal character, and can offer opinions of this actor we think would be great, this one not so much. And that voice matters to our partners because they know that we're speaking from experience of years and years of seeing what works and what doesn't work here. Then we also, I give notes on the edits, you know, what plays, when something is first cut together, they send me a rough edit of what it would look like. This works, this isn't clear, which when you're making anything, I think to show it to fresh eyes and ears can be valuable. And if reacted to in the right way, they seem to find it useful. I mean, I try not to say, are you kidding? This is awful. How could you do this? Or you must do it that way. You know, just trying to be useful in reactions.
But you've been doing this for nearly three decades, and you've seen a lot of shows come and a lot of shows go. Is the Downton Abbey experience and explosion surprising even to you?
Yes, completely, totally. Surprising even to the producers in England. I think we all knew it was a good, solid show, although I turned it down the first time it was offered
right.
to me, which I write about in the book.
You do.
Yes, I think we all thought it would be really entertaining. Maybe it would go on to a second season, maybe not. We didn't know. We began to have an inkling that it would be a hit when it aired in the UK, because it did air before we were broadcasting it. And so we had time to kind of take our positions and make the most of it. Fortuitously, we had just spent some time rebranding Masterpiece and kind of modernizing how we do business, including, you know, social media and, you know, just making the whole thing more accessible to a younger audience. Right before Downton aired in this country, another little show called Sherlock
right.
aired. So we were getting a lot of attention. We were looking like a place that made brilliant choices. So it was prime time, to use an expression, for Downton to end up on our air. It was really a perfect storm for it to get the attention it did.
So let me ask again to that flexing the muscle question. So the show is a success. Julian Fellowes is at the helm, and everything's going by. And I just want to use Downton as an example for what you do. So with respect to people who binge watch and haven't seen every episode yet, let's just say they're going to kill off a main character.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the actor wants to leave, or whatever the case may be, they're going to kill somebody off. Do you get involved in that decision, or are you just left saying, okay, we have to deal with this now?
Well, now can we talk about this character that we're referring to? And there can't be anybody.
No,
I think you're saying what happened to Matthew, right?
Right. Yeah.
There can't be. Okay. Matthew Crawley goes under the truck.
Yeah.
And dies. He's been a huge love interest, Matthew and Mary. Will they, won't they? They get together, they have a child, and Matthew is killed. That actually was a decision made by Dan Stevens, the actor.
Right.
So there was no debating it. He was determined to go. If we had said no, absolutely not, he would have said bye-bye, just the same as he did.
Okay.
This way. I mean, he had his own creative reasons for going on to other things.
But he could have left the relationship. He could have been had to go see a sick aunt.
Ah, I see. I see what you're asking. No, actually, that creatively was Julian Fellowes, who created
yes.
Downton Abbey. That was his take on it. That if Matthew was going to leave, he had to leave for good and forever, because in the storyline, Matthew and Mary had been together. They'd been apart. He had been ill. He had recovered. I think the audience wouldn't have believed if he disappeared, for instance. That never would have worked.
Right.
It had to be swift and definite. So if the question is, like Clue, how was he going to, the game Clue, was he going to die by the,
right.
the revolver or the knife or the wrench? And that was entirely Julian's call that it be an accident.
And is the American audience ever thought of in major decisions in a series? And for example,
I don't think so. No,
okay.
I think the writers of, I'm just thinking about that. If there's an instance when they would have said this will work better in America, no, I don't think so, because these programs are made primarily for a British audience. They're shown in the BBC or ITV or Channel 4. I think sometimes in the casting, that would be the place where the producers and directors would think, this actor will be better known in the States or has a following or will play well. I think that's probably where it would show up.
The name of the book is Making Masterpiece. It is published by Penguin Press, and it's just out in paperback. Rebecca Eaton, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Great. Fun to talk to you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Making Masterpiece. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.